On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning. Welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. And our first cast this morning is with the CEO of the Victorian Fisheries Authority, Travis Dowling. You'll be happy to know that the fishing future is looking bright, and there's a good chance our recreational fishing species can adapt to a changing climate with a little help from those in charge. It's The Big Fish, and how do we adapt our fisheries to climate change in this harsh country of extremes? Travis Dowling is the CEO of Victorian Fisheries Authority and joins us on the line. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, and good morning to all of your keen fishing listeners out there.
Well, we do share a big border and big rivers, and particularly for our listeners in the Riverina and Albury Way and down in the Snowy Mountains and on the far south coast, Victoria's their backyard as well. So it's really important to a lot of people to know that the fisheries on your side of the border are being managed as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And look, lots of Victorians love fishing New South Wales waters. And we, you know, we certainly consider the Murray a shared river for both of us to, for all of us to support and enjoy. And there's some wonderful trout fisheries around Cancobin and Jindabyne and others that that we all love getting into. So, you know, we'll share our Goulburn and Ovens River and our Lake Hume and Lake Dartmouth, and, you know, you share your Jindabyne and Cancobin, and everyone's happy.
Yeah, well, I'll let you in on a secret. I used to always just trundle across the border from Tumbarumba down to Corryong and spent lovely hours with the family and friends on the rivers of that part of Victoria. It's just so close to where I used to live in the Riverina. I just love that part of the world. And is there anything that we could do to streamline licensing for those people in that part of the world? Is there any way that you don't have to go and buy an extra license in your backyard there if you live down south?
Look, it's a really good question. It's something that we are actively working with New South Wales Fisheries to try and fix, because, I mean, people don't like having to get 20 different licenses. You've got trailer boat licenses, a boat license, you've got your boat driving license, and you've got your fishing license. We're working with New South Wales Fisheries on trying to get reciprocation of Victoria and New South Wales license. And what that basically means is if you've got one license, you can fish both waters. But what we've trialled at the moment, Lake Hume is managed as a Victorian water, but we've changed our regs to say if you're fishing Lake Hume, we're happy that you've got a New South Wales license. We don't need a Victorian license. So that's the start of it. We're hoping the same will happen with Lake Mulwala from a New South Wales perspective. And then ultimately, we move towards one license. So it doesn't matter where you're fishing, you don't have to panic. Yeah, have I got my Victorian or have I got my New South Wales license?
Gee, that's an olive branch for you to open up Lake Hume. There's some great yellowbelly in there. And, of course, the Mitter, beautiful trout river runs in there too. Some big brown trout. And the odd rainbow trout and some native fish too, some cod and oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had some excellent reports just really in the last few weeks of like cracking cod being caught in what would traditionally be trout water down in the lower Mitter, people flicking spinnerbaits around and catching some really good sort of, you know, clear water, dark cod. So that's great to see because they're still getting 2 or 3 pound brown trout there, but they're also in some of those sort of deeper holes. There's a big cod lurking there, so we always love seeing that.
That's great, isn't it? And cod out of gin clear water are just so beautiful. I know in the western rivers it is turbid and they get quite sort of pale and ghostly.
Yep.
Obviously they change to suit their environment, but out of the clear mountain streams, boy, they're incredible. And that's the topic of the discussion today, isn't it? Transitioning, even though trout are wonderful and they'll survive where they can, it's not a question of trout v natives, it's a question of adapting, and Macquarie perch and trout cod and cod bass as well, are they adaptable enough to hopefully help us through a changing climate?
Look, it's a really good topic, and nothing stays still in fishing. And if you look at our fisheries over the last 100 years in Victoria and New South Wales, you will see really significant changes, some for the good, some for the worse. But nothing stays the same, and we have to continue adapting with changes that have occurred. So if you look at some of the New South Wales rivers going back, they were chock-a-block full of bass and the Macquarie perch, and there was trout cod, some of those rivers. And then we had things like the introduction of European carp and redfin and other species that, that really predated on those fisheries. And we had land clearing occurring. And we had lots of bushfires that then filtered up a lot of the rivers. And over the last 100 years, you've seen changes in how rivers fish. But I'm really, really happy to say that since the 70s and 80s, it really started in the 90s, we've seen a recovery in a lot of these rivers that many people thought were basically cactus in terms of fisheries. And we've seen some changing things occur. So I'll give you an example. So a bloke by the name of Robbie Alexander, he talks about down in Victoria called Wangaratta, where he has the local kids come and complain to him because they go and fish in the middle of town. They're only catching 5 cod in a session. And, you know, he talks about his childhood and says, I fished that river 15 years and never caught anything but carp.
Our listeners wouldn't maybe know that one of the strongholds of the Macquarie Perch, which is really weird, is the river that runs right through the centre of Melbourne, upstream in the suburbs.
You know a lot about your fish. I have to give you that, Scott. That is absolutely wonderful.
I've fished in the Yarra, I've chased trout Macquarie Perch. I mean, where there's water, I'll have a go, mate. This is why I'm the host of the Big Fish.
You are a man after my own heart, and you're spot on. And the legend goes that that self-sustaining population of Macquarie Perch that starts around Eltham and comes down from Warburton all the way down through Templestowe and all the way down, follows it all the way really down to Dyett's Falls in Collingwood in terms of the Yarra. But that population, as the legend will go, was translocated from the King Parrot Creek that runs out of the Goulburn up past King Lake in old metal milk crates back in the early 1900s. And it was a translocated population outside of its natural range brought over the divide into the Yarra. And it is one of the strongest and last surviving populations of Macquarie Perch outside of places like Dartmouth and the Seven Creeks and Hughes and Holland Creek. That Yarra population is one of the last. And it is, I suppose, testament again to sometimes you need to build populations that might necessarily be in the natural range, but for the survival of these species, we need to look at where rivers have been altered. I mean, the Yarra is full of, it's got a lot of trout, it's got a lot of redfin, it's got a lot of carp and roach and other things like that. And it's not a pristine, unaltered environment, but it's a great last stronghold of Macquarie Perch, and we look after them pretty well in that river.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. So it does give us hope, too, of relocation and also, building up populations of fish that have been stocked so that they can breed in the wild. They're trying that in the Retreat River, back in their old stomping ground up in Winburndale Rivulet, in the river that they got their name from, the Macquarie catchment. Of course, Cataract Dam at the back of Wollongong, which is really weird. They were put there from a flood event in Gundagai a century ago, and that's a stronghold too. So we're really great that we're looking after these fish. Wouldn't it be great if they came back in big numbers and we could actually throw a fly at them again, Travis? That I'm sure you'd love that to be a lasting legacy of your time at the VFA.
It is something that we are absolutely committed to. And there are so many good people in New South Wales and across Victoria who are working on this. But I will say, without scaring people too much, they are really at the brink at the moment, Macquarie Perch. They are. I mean, I have sleepless nights about where they're going to be in 5 years' time, unless we can crack this code on captive breeding and get large-scale stocking occurring, which is what brought Murray cod back from the brink. It's what's brought silver perch back from the brink. It's what's brought trout cod back from the brink. But we need this large-scale stocking Macquarie perch to be able to give them the ability to overcome things like water use changes and where we've got altered water systems, land clearing changes, and introduction of other species. We need a critical mass of Macquarie perch to come in. And Will Truman, who was an absolute lover of this species, wrote a wonderful book about the history of Macquarie perch. And he writes in the 20s, 1920s, post-World War I, a lot of soldiers that were coming back, they lived on this species. The rivers run black with them in terms of how many there were. And then, unfortunately, fires come through and knocked a lot of them about in terms of silt. And they never really recovered then, the introduction of redfin and carp and others. But that is, is something we're heavily investing in, as we are with bass. And I will say, with bass in Victoria, rivers like the Mitchell River, the Snowy River, And all the way up the coast, we've got a really large bass stocking program occurring now, where we're putting at least 200,000 bass every year into the Snowy River to recover that population, and into the Mitchell River, and into the Nicholson River. And we are starting to see, there's a place called Chatford on the River Avon, and people, you know, talk about, that was a redfin and carp fishery only. They now go down and they throw a line in the water. They're getting five or six bass in a session. So we love stories like that. And it's what we're all about, making fishing better tomorrow than it is at the moment. And there's some really good success stories there.
It's The Big Fish, and we're speaking with Travis Dowling, who's the CEO of Victorian Fisheries Authority. And Travis, before we get on to saltwater species in the South Coast, because you've got some great fisheries that are sort of shared fisheries as well with New South Wales, it's lovely that you invite them in to spend their money with your tourist operators. But the National Carp Eradication Program, it's been on the back burner for a while. They've done tons of science. This virus has proven to be carp specific in South Africa and other places, and not harmful to native fish. The scientists seem pretty sure that it would be a good thing. Is there any movement on that? Do you think that it could get up?
Look, I'm hoping that we'll start to see some progress on this now. It hasn't moved anywhere. And look, I joined fisheries about 15 years ago. And when I joined 15 years ago, I sat down with the CSIRO to talk about this virus. At that point, 15 years ago, they had done all the testing on whether or not this virus would impact other species and likelihood in terms of fatality of carp. And for 15 years, this one's just been kicked around. And when I have public forums, and I often go to speak in angling clubs, I get asked this question more than any other question. And Victoria has been a strong advocate and a strong supporter of releasing this virus. And people, you know, obviously, they're nervous about whenever you release a virus out there, but we look at the impacts of Khaleesi virus on rabbits. The hills used to climb around northern Victoria with rabbits. They don't anymore. And removing a large proportion of the carp population from our rivers will provide the opportunity for small-bodied natives like Galaxid and Gudgeon and all these others to come back, and they will provide the food source for large-bodied natives such as Murray Cod, Gold Perch and others. So what we have at the moment is we really have an intransigence to actually for someone to bite the bullet and get out there and do it. As we've spoken about on the show before, this virus is endemic in Asia. They've still got carp there. The virus won't kill all the carp, but it does reduce numbers. It's endemic in Europe, where there are still carp there. It's never been proven to impact on other species. So I hope we get some commitment from the Commonwealth now moving forward. It looks like there'll be some changes up there. Actually, get out and have a crack with this virus, and I'll be very happy to offer up, you know, some standalone Victorian waters and trial it in those waters that aren't connected to other catchments or basins, and to see how the virus goes. And, you know, arguments that I've been hearing are it's going to kill too many carp or it's not going to kill enough. I'm going, well, you can't have both sides of the argument. Which one is it? And if it kills a lot of carp, that's a good thing. And if it doesn't kill a lot of carp, well, then it hasn't had much of an impact. So now we're very strong supporters of having that virus out there, but we have not seen any movement from the Commonwealth on this in the last 5 years.
Big moves, of course, buying out the commercial fishers and giving them a fair deal, and they seem to be happy because they were just grubbing out an existence on the Gippsland Lakes.
They were very appropriately compensated for that transition, and you know, there were 10 licence holders and the compensation was almost $10 million. So, you know, you can sort of do those sums in your head. But I will say what we've seen in the Gippsland Lakes in Victoria after the netting has been removed has been nothing short of extraordinary. And, you know, caravan parks are full, hotels are full, discounting tables are, you know, five people deep, because we've had this amazing resurgence in King George whiting in the lakes that historically when they came in, they were netted very quickly. They're high-value species. And they weren't there for people to catch. But for the last 2.5 years, the lakes, which have been known for their black brim and dusky flathead fisheries, have been attracting people from all across Victoria, mum and dad, an average fisherman, and bagging out. I even went down there and got a dozen myself, and I would suggest that I'm no way the world's best fisherman, but they're that easy to catch. And I would say that sometimes you've got to make the hard calls, you've got to make the hard decisions, but if you walk down the main street of Lakes Entrance or Meetung now, or any of those towns around Gippsland Lakes, they would all say that in terms of their the health of their lakes, the health of the system, the tourism dollars that they're getting, the jobs that have been created since the netting was removed, none of them would have it any other way.
But you've got a manageable resource then too, haven't you? It's probably a lot easier to manage a fishery, a rod and line fishery, because you've got so many tools at your disposal. I noticed late last year you brought in a 28 to 38 centimetre slot limit that was strongly endorsed by the anglers for black brim. How's that going?
Others didn't want the bag limit dropped, so it's a 10 fish bag at the moment for black brim, and some wanted it dropped to 5 to match duskies. But basically, the proposition that we put forward, and we work really well with fishers all across Victoria, is, look, we've just removed all the commercial netting out of the Gippsland Lakes, which is going to return, hopefully, a couple of hundred tonne of whiting, flathead, and also bass and estuary perch, and black brim each year. So we'll see that those extra fish staying in the water. With the slot, all of those good big breeding fish, the blue lip, black brim, and everyone knows what the fish I'm talking about, those ones that fight like a train, sort of over that 38 and the 40 centimetre plus, they will all stay in the water and continue to breed. So what we're saying is, let's just have a look for the next couple of years, see how the extra fish in the water are contributing to the repopulating of the lakes, see how the slot's contributing to repopulating. You've still got some good fish to take home in your bag in terms of that 28 to 38 slot. There's some good eaters there that you can take home if you want to. But I reckon we've got it just about right in terms of getting that recovery. And in the next few years, hopefully we'll see the Gippsland Lake system start to equal places like Mallacoota and Lake Tyre.
Well, what we've seen at Mallacoota is simply amazing. I mean, you know, you look at the historic take from the commercial fishers there, thousands of tonnes of black brim, and now you can go out on the sand flats there. You know, Bushy and I were out there a while back, and schools of black brim and big ones, two up to 40 centimetres, would come along in their hundreds and very difficult to catch. We'd use surface lures, fine gear, and fine and far off. You know, you'd cast with the wind, and it was just so invigorating. Let them all go, caught a nice feed of flathead. It was just extraordinary how that fishery came back from being so heavily harvested to now so many of those fish getting to spawning size and above.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I have to say, I've got a lovely little anecdote. I was at Mallacoota visiting some of our team and catching up with fish, and I went for a morning run, and don't get excited, everyone, I'm not that fit. So I went for a morning run along the side, and there's a lovely boardwalk there, and the Future Fish have put in some great platforms, and there was three different platforms I ran past, and I always stop and I say people fishing because I can't help myself and ask them how they're going. At every platform, this was about 9 in the morning, it wasn't too early, there were a couple of people fishing, a man and his wife, and a couple, they all had 3 or 4 black brim, and they were just fishing, you know, a frozen dead prawn under a sinker cast off the end of these platforms that would get fished, you know, by everyone in town. They were, you know, they'd get fish regularly, and they all had fish. And I just, you know, it made me feel so good as I ran on that people who made the trip to Mallacoota were enjoying that experience, and it wasn't just for the, you know, Bushy and Starlo and people like this who are very good
those
fishers.
Those blow-ins from up north.
well, people who really, you know, they're gun fishers, and to see mums and dads be able to get onto a few fish and have that experience, it was just wonderful.
What about the impact of runoff from the floods and, of course, the fires taking so much vegetation in the catchment? Has that had any adverse impact on Mallacoota or any of those areas down sort of the northeast of Victoria where the fires were so bad?
Well, we've had a really, really alternate response coming back from that. I think there was a lot of the water that's come down, and my best wishes and thoughts to all those that have been impacted by the floods in New South Wales and Queensland. We've got the tail end of them mostly down in Victoria. Those high flows have really contributed towards really strong outcomes in terms of some of our inlets. So they've assisted in a good regrowth and recovery from the bushfires. And there's a bloke by the name of Gus Gear or Graham Gear down here who's the head of the East Gippsland Catchment Management Authority. And Gus and his team have just been phenomenal in the work that they've been doing in supporting the revegetation. But really, the natural environment, the way that those extra rains have come down and kicked off the regrowth and that spring regrowth has really seen the systems look looking incredibly healthy, the best they've looked in 15 years. So, you know, so sometimes, you know, with a poor outcome, which is fires and floods, there can also be, you know, some sweeteners in there at the end. And that's what we're seeing in terms of those inlets like Wingen and Tamboon and Mallacoota, which is great.
And I think having a standalone Victorian Fisheries Authority that's purely there for fish and fish habitat and the aquatic environment and sustainable practices is quite different to that harvest mentality that you have in the Department of Primary Industries, which is great for farming. But there's a bit of conflict there. So, you know, you as a standalone group, you've got a very clear focus that it's all about sustainable practices when it comes to the fish stocks.
Well, look, it's a really good point. And I will say, people that are involved in this understand that we're not just a primary industry about harvesting a resource, and we're more than just a recreation. So we don't sit in the sport and recreation sort of bucket, but we don't also sit in an agriculture primary industries bucket. We are an organisation and an authority that part of our responsibility is to grow rec fishing participation, grow the health of our recreational waters and our nutrients, but also support the value and grow the value of our commercial fisheries. And they may be aquaculture industries, they may be wild catch fisheries with very clear management arrangements that look at the future and the sustainability. And one of the things I've said down here is that I want any Victorian to be able to go to a port in Victoria and buy fresh local caught fish off the boat. And so we've worked out line caught permits with strict caps and tradable, like in terms of the number of snapper of whiting they can have, and a strict cap on cats so they're not conflicting with the rec fishers, but they are providing that opportunity to buy fresh local caught fish in any channel port off the boat. But my hope is that across Australia that all the other states move towards a standalone fisheries authority. I think it is the best model, as the way to go. And it really gives effect to the fact that in Victoria there's a million people who go fishing each year, and it's an $80 million business in terms of the commercial sector. But it needs to be managed by itself without some of the competing interests, whether it's cattle or sheep or wheat or any of the other primary industries.
Well, it seems like the bottom line is sustainability, that you're working hard to get the balance right. Not an easy task, but thanks so much for sharing some time with us this morning. I'll let you get out and go fishing. That's the other point. As the boss, you must constantly fish, hopefully as much as you can. It's an important part of your job.
It is a beautiful part of the job, and thank you so much for having me on. And all the best to all of the fishers out there across New South Wales and those in Victoria that are listening, and hopefully you go and get a couple today.
Thanks, Travis Dowling.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
I fished everywhere, man. I fished everywhere, man. Up beaches, boats and piers, man. I'm in up to my ears, man. With hand light rods or spears, man. I fished everywhere. I caught pinkies, kingies, dragon whiting, black brim, blackfish when they're biting, flathead, flounder, pike and hake, blue pointers, tiger sharks, that's flake, redfin, yellow belly, marigot, tarpon, brown trout, rainbows, even had a carp on.
Yeah, but what kind of bait?
Freshborn spivvies, crabs and kunji, beachworms, sandworms, sperma, spongy, whitebait, froggies, nippers, yabbies, ockies, squidgies, potties, crabbies, pilchards, mussels, cabbage, weed on, all the stuff fish love to feed on. I'll try any bait, mate, to get fish on a plate, mate. I fish it early light, mate, and sometimes through the night, mate. I catch and then release, mate. Yes, I've fished everywhere.
Yeah, but name is a couple of spots, mate.
Cape York, Cooktown, Coleroy, Naruma, Mossman, Maryborough, Western Port and Cooma, Noosa, Bribie, Coolum, Gatacoolum, Harvey Bay, Byron Bay, Bowen and Maroolan, Brisbane, Gisborne, Bundaberg and Bunbury, Portland, Shark Bay, boy, I'm in a quandary. Darwin down to Perth, mate, on a boat where there's a berth, mate, on a four-wheel in the outback, I'm set to hit the road, Jack, on a rock ledge when the tide's slack, yes, I've fished everywhere.
Crikey, anywhere else?
Tweed to Servers, Ballina to Bundy, Gove to Darwin, the Reefs, Whitsunday, Gosford, Tarry, Wyndham, Warragamba, Burrinjuck, Tullibuck, Laurenton, Yamba, Frankston, Brighton, Air Tasmania, Esperance, Albany, guess I've got a mania. I fished everywhere, man. I fished everywhere, man. Beaches, boats and piers, man. I'm in up to my ears, man. Whether handline rods or spears, man. Yes, I fished everywhere. Fished here, there, everywhere. I fished everywhere. Gotta see your license, mate.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott. How's it going?
Going well, mate. What's cooking?
Heaps. Heaps and heaps. I've had a most fantastic week this week. I've had friends over. I spent 3 years of my life at university in Western Australia, University of Western Australia, and met some wonderful friends over there. Mainly, I was playing rugby over there, but I did some fair bit of fishing as well. Oh, golly, the fishing in WA is extraordinarily good. There's a lot of coastline over there.
Oh, yeah, a lot of options.
So a friend of mine from Western Australia arrived to stay with us this week. And one in particular, a friend from Bunbury, he stayed an extra week. So during that week, I thought, gee, I know he's a keen fisherman, so I was really keen to take him fishing. But unfortunately, I had a problem with my truck. And my truck started spurting oil all over the joint. Now, that meant that I couldn't take my boat down onto the beach, which meant, really, I couldn't take him fishing in Stinkpot, which he was very keen to do. So I thought, this is a dreadful situation I found myself in. But luckily, a friend two doors up said, take my truck. He said, you can have a lend of my truck and take your friend out fishing. Oh, I said, thank you so much. That was very appreciative.
I think there might be a few snapper fillets going his way, Stinker.
Well, it was I think might have been an investment, really, but that's all very good.
No, that's how the world goes round.
Well, what happened was this, and it happened on Wednesday. This week on Wednesday, it was Wednesday. So I put my mate in the boat and off we went from the corner of the beach. And we drove straight across the Fingal Bay to the island. And then I tossed out a couple of lures and we went along the western face of the island. Well, there's so many tailor jumping around. I've always complained about the number of tailor. Well, there were plenty where I went on Wednesday. So we caught, I think, 6 or 7. And that was enough. Like, we didn't need any more. You only take what you need. We thought, well, 6 or 7 tailor is plenty. Mm.
Any size in them, Stinker?
Oh, they'd be not quite a kilo, I don't think.
Yeah, nice ones for under the griller.
Well, the griller or more likely the smoker.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're headed for the smoker. That's where their future lies, in the smoker. So there were plenty of tailor to be caught, but we caught plenty then. And I thought, the sea's a bit rough. But then I looked around the corner to my not-so-secret snapper spot, and I said, and he's a very good swimmer. Remember the last bloke I took out was a good swimmer?
Yes.
Yeah, well, this bloke's a good swimmer too. So I said, right, I mean, it's really only adding a little bit of drama to the whole experience because, I mean, I've been doing it for 40 years and I haven't even, you know, there's no issue. But it looks like it looks like you might have to swim, but you don't. That's how it is. And then I said to you, look, you're a good swimmer, you'll be right. They feel a little bit better if I tell them that. Anyway, so then off we went. And we went out there and I anchored up and I got a good sit. But again, I want the nor'easter, but it was an easterly. Then it swung around to a southerly. The wind just kept swirling, which makes it very, very difficult, Scott, if you're trying to anchor up to a bommie, because you want to depend upon the wind. You don't want the wind to change direction and blow you closer to the bombing. However, I changed anchoring spots 2 or 3 times. But once I was satisfied, I put a big prawn. We had big prawns and my secret new bait, which is Lano mullet.
Oh, yes, yes. How do they go?
I caught that Lano mullet a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, in the grit hole.
In the grit hole. So I cut the head and shoulders off them. Oh, the snapper went crackers. We got, we left them biting again. But my mate, his first throw, he got a snapper 4 kilo. Then we got another few, and they're all pretty much between 3 and 4 kilo. So he said, how good is this? We go fishing, we catch as many tails as we want, we catch as many snapper as we want, and then we go home, had a couple of beers and thought, he reckons it's the greatest place on earth.
Great day.
So he'll go back to Bunbury, of course, and the fishing over there, I have been up to a place called Columbaroo. Oh, dear me. I mean, the fishing up way up northwest and western Australia is equal or better than the tropical up around Queensland. The top half or the top quarter of Australia, the fish are jumping on top of each other.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there. And I was just saying to someone the other day, he said, what's the nicest trout stream you've ever fished? And I said, you won't believe this, but it was Lefroy Brook in the giant Karai Forest down near Pemberton in the far southwest. It's an amazing, beautiful, clear water trout stream full of brown and rainbow trout. There's a hatchery on it, and it runs through this incredible forest, and it's beautiful wading, and they've got everything over there, haven't they?
Oh, they do. It's just a long way. But I went over originally in 1972, and I spent a few years at university over there, and I met a lot of real dear friends who they still are dear friends of mine. And so we'd get together about once or twice a year, either over here or over there. But it's all, we always go fishing. Fishing's a must. Fishing's essential. But fishing over there, like, it's just unbelievable. The place called McGowan's Island. Check that out. McGowan's Island. Oh, dear, mate. Yeah, so, we had a wonderful week. And the sun's out. The sun come out too this week. How good was that?
Gee, that's a rare occurrence of late, isn't it? It makes you feel better. Is the water nice and clear again?
Yeah, it's clearing up and warming up, and there's a lot of bait fish. And to top it all off, up come a whale within 20 metres of us, and he said, what? He nearly jumped out of stink pot, you know, because we're on the footer and had it way out sea. And this whale come up beside us, and it's only the second one I've seen this season. But it blew and made this almighty noise and just rolled. They roll their shoulders, and it seems like it's never going to end. And for someone who didn't expect it, when you're in a little boat, it can be quite exciting.
They could swallow you in that 11-foot tinny. He'll have to really turn it on to reciprocate next time you go over west. That's a pretty good trip, isn't it?
Well, the others that come over live at Margaret River. So it's a beautiful part of the world. We land in Perth and then head south.
Yeah, nice stuff. Well, you're doing good things for our friends over west, Stinker, and it's good to know that the tailor did turn up. Maybe after all of the rain and there's so much bait fish about, perhaps that's a turning point for the tailor, because their numbers had been, the run had been pretty poor before that.
Oh, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced by a long shot that they're anything like they used to be. However, it was very nice to see a good, solid school of tailor, that's for sure.
All right, tight line, Stinker. Thanks for joining us again on The Big Fish.
Hello, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Folk singing guitar, playing girl. I ain't seen the world, no, I've not traveled far. I'm saving dollars for a 1962 ruby red interior. Our series Valiant. Thank you. highway. Yeah. With you, second hand dealing, boy, I'm gonna love him the best way I can. I know I can. Cause I'm a country girl in a city whirlpool, and I'm pulling over, man. I'm gonna let you through. I'm living in the left hand lane of my city. Golden, I don't like pearls. I'm just your regular West Australian fisherman's daughter. I'm a middle class folk singing guitar playing girl.
Peter LeBlanc lives on the mouth of the longest river system, coastal New South Wales, the mighty Hawkesbury. Good morning, Pete.
Morning, mate. How are you going?
Going really well. Boy, it's a vast waterway, goes forever and ever and ever, right up to the back of Sydney. But you mainly focus on the mouth, and Pittwater, of course, is sort of an offshoot of that, I guess. How are things looking in that part of the world?
Mate, up to Hawkesbury and what have you, we're starting to find, as the colder water comes in, things are getting a little bit quiet. But, you know, the Hawkesbury River fish is a little bit funny. You know, it's not one of those rivers that you go out into the centre and try and catch fish out to the centre of the river. There's a lot more activity right in close, you know. Two boat lengths out away from the shoreline is where you'll catch lots of bream, you can catch flatties, you'll catch jewfish, and, you know, that's where all the action seems to happen. So if you fish in the right kind of areas, you know, you're still going to catch some fish.
It's a mighty, mighty river, isn't it, downstream of sort of Moonee and down towards the mouth. And it's such a huge estuary, so much fresh water still running out from the massive rain. We've had over a metre of rain upstream. What impact is that having?
It's not too bad at the moment. It's, you know, the water, because we haven't had so much rain, a great deal of rain in a short period of time, it does handle it pretty well, the Hawkesbury River. But when you get the big dumpings like we've had in recent times, you know, it does quiet it down. And the big part is that it makes it so that we have to fish the run out tide just so that you aren't end up fishing around your anchor all the time, your anchor line. Because, of course, when you got a big flow running out of the river and you anchor up, your boat is going to act like it's on a run out tide. And if it's an incoming tide, as soon as your lines get down 3 to 5 feet, they start travelling the other way. So all of a sudden, you're catching fish from around your anchor, which is a little bit of a hard task for much of the fish.
I've caught your burley pot from time to time. We've spoken about your popsicle pot, the giant bucket of frozen fish scraps from all the fish you catch and all the fish you clean. That's dynamite. It's amazing how many fish it attracts in that system, considering the amount of commercial netting. There are so many commercial fishers who've been pushed to the Hawkesbury out of Botany Bay and Lake Macquarie and the other recreational fishing havens, and it cops a heap of pressure. But there's still a stack of fish in there, isn't there?
There is, mate. And like I say, it's one of those kind of river systems that you've got to get your head around to start off with and start to realise that I'm not going to go out in the centre and fish. I'm going to fish towards the edges of the river. And as I say, you know, that tends to be the places where you actually catch some fish. And I mean, you will still catch some fish out in the centre. But, you know, all around the structure and around the rocks and the drop-off. And I mean, when you get a sounder and a good sounder and you start heading towards the shoreline, you'll actually see what I mean. You'll come out of a shallow, a lot of water, and then there'll be a deep channel that'll run right along the hole of the edge of the river. And where that hole is or where the deeper water is, that's where we've got all the rock and everything else that's tending to hang out of the banks and what have you down deep. And that's, of course, where the fish all congregate to get out of the strong current.
Look, I'll tell you something, you fishos listening in, and there aren't many people you could say this about. Go out with Pete. And I have on so many occasions, and he can virtually guarantee you'll catch a jewfish. The size depends. You've got to be lucky to get a big one. But there are some spots there that are so productive for jewfish that you have that it's just a fait accompli, really. The right bait, the right time, particularly the tides are everything. But it's a prolific mulloway fishery, isn't it?
It is indeed. And again, like you say, it's more about with jewfish, about the times that you're going to go out and try and target them. More than, you know, the time that you've got, because if you're going out there on the wrong moon phase, and you're not going to catch many, if at all any of them. So I find a lot of the time, 4 days before the new or the full moon, tend to work pretty well. And then if you go out there and fish after the new moon, about again the 3 days or 4 days after the new or the full moon, that's when the better times are. Now, as I said, that 8 day period in between, you will still catch a few, but you won't catch as many as what you're going to catch in those other periods.
And top and bottom of the tide, either side of that tidal change, they just go ballistic, don't they? They really feed heavily, and they must be such efficient feeders. And then they just go back and sulk behind the wreck or in the hole and wait for the tide to stop next time.
That's exactly what they do, mate. They go out there in that break or the last part of the tides, they tend to go off to their feeding grounds, and then, like you say, they use the tides once it's turned to go back to the grounds or to move off other grounds that are close by that they know. And when we're doing our burley kind of things, what we're trying to do is we're not trying to burley up jewfish. We're trying to burley up the bait fish to us, so then in that period of time when the jewfish are actually coming out of the structure, they come over and they, you know, we've got what they want to eat. We've got those bait fish and everything else at the back of our boat, us making our area, you know, inviting for them to be able to let's just say, do a running pass or a feed on the way through. And, yeah. You know, you go and catch a fair few fish on that little area.
And still monsters caught. This is a good time of year to catch them. They're quite fresh tolerant and quite tolerant to water temperature. They don't mind cooler water. Still many fish over 30 kilograms caught. some boys caught one at the mouth of the estuary near a little beach, actually, on the central coast side, that was 38 kilos, and it had a 40-centimetre silver trevally, a 50-centimetre tailor, a brim. You know, it had huge fish in its stomach. They don't. It's not just the bait they eat, Pete.
No, that's right, mate. It's not just the bait they eat. Like you said, it's everything there as well. And, you know, for the bigger fish, you know, you can catch really good fish with, you know, big baits. That's one of the beauties of going for jewfish. You can actually get some of those really big baits out there, and the small fish aren't going to touch it because they're too big for them to eat. But, you know, one of the larger fish, he'll eat it with glee.
Whack on a whole squid, like a whole squid with a couple of hooks in it.
Well, a whole squid, big mullet. I mean, years ago when I was first starting to talk to you, I mean, we caught jewfish over 30 kilos out near Lion Island out there, and you know, he swallowed a 2 kilo mullet. So there was nothing wrong with him about taking that large bait. And as I said, we were actually just targeting large jewfish at the time. And you know, when you've got a mullet that's 48 or 58 centimetres or something it was, that's a fair amount to try and swallow.
Yeah, and don't worry too much about what type of live bait you've got on. They'll eat everything. Not that you're allowed to use snapper and brim for a live bait, but they'll eat snapper, they'll eat brim. They eat anything that they can get into their mouth. So jewfish are a good option at this time of year. We've got the dark of the moon coming, change of the moon. That should be a good time in the next week or so.
Exactly right. You know, we're coming up to that period that I mentioned, that it's going to be the best time to go out there. And if you've got the time, you know, as I've said to you on many occasions, you don't have to go out there during your night time and freeze. You can actually go up there during the daytimes, just pick those tides and go out there and enjoy yourself.
And here's the big secret. This really brings them to the boat. Play this song. Tight Lines, Peter LeBlanc.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for your call.
Thanks so much for stepping aboard for another episode of The Big Fish. Don't forget, you can catch it at your leisure on the podcast, at the ABC Listen app, or wherever you catch your podcasts. Tight Lines.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well?
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
ho, ho.
The next time I come up this way,
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet. Ho, ho.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.